the Messiah of God, Jesus, Yeshua, he's Messiah. You don't need this temple, and you, Israel, crucified him. Ah, they'll say, didn't we have this argument 2,000 years ago? Crucify him! Crucify him! And here are these two witnesses. In my opinion, I think they are very near the temple. When people shut up, you know, shut up! And they go after him to try to kill him. But every time somebody charges them, fire comes down, plagues start happening, water turns into blood for 3.5 years, 1,260 days. When God allows them to die, something fascinating, an interesting detail, they exchange portions, they exchange gifts. Are they so over the moon that lets us go into our bank accounts and our credit cards and let's start shopping for gifts and portions? Or is this in the Bible for some specific reason? I think it's there for some specific reason. When these two are killed, gifts are given. There's only one other time in the Bible that I'm aware of where God's people gave gifts, or this word, and that is in the book of Esther, right around chapter 9. Do you remember the story? God's people in Babylon. It's been a while since we've had Cyrus and then Cambyses, his son. The Medes wane in power. The Persians begin to get the upper hand. And then you have Artaxerxes and Darius and those guys. And then Artaxerxes number one. In the book of Esther, he is called Ahasuerus. But Ahasuerus is not his name. Ahasuerus is a title. It's Artaxerxes the First. And you know the story of Esther. Artaxerxes has long forgotten the decree of King Cyrus to let the Jews go home, and he's just doing his thing, being the administrator of this vast Persian empire. His wife, he doesn't like. She is gone. He has a beauty pageant of sorts, and they scour the 127 provinces all over the huge empire, and one of the gals picked is Esther. She is fair of face and form. God made her exceptionally beautiful. What for? Her uncle says, for such a time as this, Esther. Because what happens? You have evil Haman. Haman gets to drinking with the king, and he says, you know what? I don't really like these Jews. In fact, how about this? Let's roll the dice, in Hebrew called pur, P-U-R. Anything plural, you add the I-M, so it's purim. Roll the dice, and the date happened upon Adar 14. That's the day we're going to kill all the Jews. Okay, asks Haman. Yeah, fine. Mordecai, who works in the king's household, he hears about it. And he knows that Haman actually hates Mordecai because Mordecai won't give him his props. So they set a date on the calendar. And if you know the story, Mordecai goes to Esther and he says, you got to go tell the king what's going to happen. She says, I can't. He hasn't invited me. And if he doesn't invite me specifically and I just show up, it could be my death. Mordecai says, yeah, I know. It's a big step. But how do you know, Esther, that God hasn't made you for such a time as this? She gathers her courage. She shows up to the king's royal court. And there's that tense moment where there she is. And the king looks at her. And if he says, what are you doing here? And is not pleased with her presence, off with her head. But he loves Esther. And he says, please come. And if you know the story, she puts together a banquet. She invites Haman. A bunch of things transpire. Haman, who has already constructed a gallows for Mordecai out front, great big one. The tables are turned when Esther says to her beloved husband, the king, well, I'd love to be all the things you want me to be, but I'm sorry, but I'm going to be dead soon. And he says, what do you mean dead? And then she reminds him about what his edict is about the 14th day of Adar. What? How come I did this foolish thing? The king gives Mordecai the ability to rally Jewish troops against anyone trying to kill them. And then on the 13th and the 14th is when the Jews turn the table, and with the king's blessing, they are no longer persecuted. In fact, that evil Haman, he is hanged on the very gallows that he had intended for Mordecai. It's such a stunning turn of events how God moves in and through the book of Esther. There's no mention of the Lord, as I recall. What's it doing in the Bible? Mordecai says, so amazing is God's hand behind the scenes. Let's always remember the 14th of Adar as the feast of Purim, the dice. And there, in chapter 9, they give gifts. Is there a correlation of Revelation 11 and Esther chapter 9? The answer, I don't know. But I've noticed over the years, if it's in the Bible in a specific detail, it's there for some very important reasons. Let's develop that thought. Purim, gifts. The Jews still to this day give gifts on Purim. It's called the Mishloach Menot, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. And it means the sending of portions. That's what the book of Revelation has said. Portions are given. They're baskets of food and drink. And according to the halacha, which is kind of the Emily Post, so to speak, and again, apologies if I'm not saying these terms quite correctly, subtitled The Way to Behave. The halacha says that every Jew over bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah should send such a gift on Purim, the 14th of Adar, as a gift to at least one recipient. Also, what has happened, the Jews will dress up in disguise. It really sort of took off in the 1400s Europe, but this idea of dressing up and forming a disguise, the notion goes well before the dressing up like cowboys and Indians or whatever it might be. If you happen to be in Israel or a Jewish community on Purim, around Adar 14 and then Adar 15 for those who were outside of Jerusalem or in the diaspora, you'll notice that they're dressing up. Oh, is it Halloween? It has nothing to do with Halloween. It's the idea of the disguise to commemorate how God disguised his presence behind the natural events described in Esther. By the way, what happens at the midpoint, among other things? Let's go ahead and go to our first slide. Here's the menorah, and let's not ever forget that operating behind all of these scenes is a very important backdrop. The seven feasts of Moses. Go ahead, Blake. The first three are in the spring, specifically the month of Nisan. On the 14th, never the 13th, never the 15th. The 14th, that's Passover. You know about that. On the 15th, for the next 7 days, unleavened bread. And then you find the Sabbath after the 14th, the Saturday after the 14th, and then the next day, Sunday, you celebrate first fruits. Next, 50 days after Passover is Pentecost. Go ahead. The fall feasts are trumpets, always on the first of the month of Tishri. It's coinciding with a new moon, which could be tough to spot in those days because a new moon is setting in the western sky very near the setting sun. Tough to see. So the Jews traditionally will celebrate trumpets over 2 days, the first and the second of Tishri. Then on the 10th of Tishri, not the 9th and not the 11th, but the 10th is atonement. Leviticus 16, that's when the high priest would go behind the veil and he would sprinkle the blood and cleanse the temple. And then on the 15th is tabernacles. Not the 14th and not the 16th, tabernacles. And it was to run for 7 days. The last day also had some interesting connotations to it. But anyway, there's your seven feasts. And as we've said before, and I'll keep saying it until there's no breath in my body, have you noticed that the first four of these feasts were in fact prophetic. Passover was prophetic of Jesus' death on the cross. He is the unleavened or sinless one, the bread of God. And then he rose on the first fruits. Pentecost, was that significant? Yes, it was prophetic of the birth of the church. And if the first four are prophetic, and they are, is it a stretch to think that the last three would be prophetic as well? Prophetic of what? Well, we'll see. The next significant event on the prophetic time clock is probably going to be the rapture of the church. I believe it's going to be somewhere near, if not smack on, the Feast of Trumpets. And there are a number of reasons for that. What about atonement? I personally believe that's going to be fulfilled by Revelation 19 when Jesus returns to the earth. Not just on any day. What if he lands on the Mount of Olives, crosses the Kidron Valley, and cleanses the temple that the Antichrist had constructed? It would make logical sense that that could be the Feast of Atonement. Well, then what about tabernacles? Every Jewish person knows that Sukkot is the commemoration of the millennial reign of Christ. That's why Peter says to Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, "Wow, look, there's Elijah and there's Moses, and there you are. And you don't look anything the same, Jesus. You're glowing." I believe that was a time bubble. I believe that that was Peter, James, and John actually beholding a glimpse of the millennial reign. That's why Peter said, "Let's build booths." He's a good Jewish kid, well taught. Must be the millennial reign, the tabernacles. Go ahead, Blake. Now we know why the significance of these dates, Israel on the time clock. We've spent some time with that over the last couple of weeks. Especially the year 606 BC, not my people. I'm going to let the Babylonians roll right over you. And then the next most important point, of course, will be the midpoint of the tribulation. Why? Because that's when God says, "I'm going to take your blindness in part off." And then Zechariah 12, verse 10, "And then they will look upon me, Jehovah God, whom they pierced." When was Jehovah God pierced? When he was on the cross. As a nation, the blindness in part is taken away, if you will. The disguise of the Antichrist has been removed. The first 3.5 years, they thought he was what? Messiah. They thought he was Haman. All that in a bag of chips. But when God opens their eyes and the Antichrist receives a mortal wound and then raises from the dead, reanimated from death, now he says, "All pretenses are gone. All disguises are dropped. I'm the God who created everything. And everybody must worship me." And he puts a statue of himself in the Holy of Holies. And the Jews go, "We're only supposed to worship Jehovah God." And now there's a statue. Wait a minute. 167 BC. That's what the Greek Antiochus IV, that's what he did. He put a statue of the Greek god Honcho in the Holy of Holies. The abomination of desolation. Ding! As an entire nation, Israel goes, you are that man that Isaiah said, "We're going to make a covenant with hell." That's you. The disguise has come off. You will worship me. Jesus in Matthew 24 says, when that day happens, the abomination of desolation, the midpoint of the great tribulation, get out of town. If you're on the roof, don't even go inside to grab your cloak. Get to the rock city of Petra. That's at the midpoint. According to Ezekiel chapter 37, is when the breath of God comes into the body, the unspiritually regenerated body of Israel that came to being in 1948. Now the breath of the valley of the dry bones is happening, and they stood up and became an exceedingly great army. That's what's happening at the midpoint. Oh, and by the way, Jeremiah 30, verse 22. Now you are my people, and I am your God. Check it out. Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39, a great earthquake is described there. There's another great earthquake that sounds quite similar. It's in Revelation chapter 6, right before the parentheses of chapter 7. Let's go there. Chapter 7, the book of Revelation. We're going to talk now about the 144,000. We know that the church is gone at the rapture. God returns his prophetic attention back to Israel. Why is it 7 years? Because it's the 70th week of Daniel's prophecy of chapter 9. Why is it divided into two halves? Why is there 1,260 days for the two witnesses? And then 144,000 Jewish evangelists, they have 1,260 days as well. Here's where I want to show you something quite significant. Next slide, Blake. 1,260 days in the first half and 1,260 in the second half. Go ahead. This is interesting. You look at any Jewish 7-year period, you cannot fit 1,260 days plus 1,260 days. You never get a full 7 years. What do you mean? Go ahead. There is always 1,260 days, a gap, and then 1,260 days. Then you can get a full 7 years, or that 70th seven, that 70th week of Daniel. Go ahead. This is where we have to do a little homework, so hang on and hang in there. Are the 1,260 days just timekeeping devices? They are definitely that. Question for us today, is there more? Might be. Here's the Jewish calendar. This will help us understand. Notice that there are 12 months, actually 13. Notice at the bottom, Adar 2, that's a leap month. Because the Jews still utilize a lunar calendar, 29 days for 1 month, 30 for the next, 29, 30, 29, 30. Some of those months can have 29 days 1 year and 30 the next. So what they do to keep their calendar current with the solar sidereal calendar of 365 and a quarter days is, look at the bottom, they insert a leap month called Adar 2. Let's go ahead and look at the year 2020 and 21. Go ahead, Blake. Those are the months that are illustrated for you, and notice some have 29 and some have 30. For instance, this year passed to us, Passover, was on Wednesday, April the 8th. Then, unleavened bread was Thursday, April the 9th. Then, first fruits was Sunday, April the 12th. Then, we'll skip now to the Jewish month of Sivan. That's Pentecost. Go ahead. See on the 6th? Well, to us, that was our Sunday, March the 29th. It's already happened. Now let's move to the fall of this year. Go ahead. Trumpets will be Saturday and Sunday, celebrated over 2 days because of the two-day thing we talked about being the first of the month. Then Atonement is going to be, of course, as always, on the 10th. That will be Monday, September the 23rd. And then on the 14th will be Tabernacles or Sukkot. Next slide. Here are the next 3 years in the Jewish calendar. Don't get eye strained to try to look at all the numbers, but that's how the months lay out. I hit the go button. Here at the bottom, notice that this particular year has 353 days. Next year, 384. Next, 355. And then 383. Next slide. Notice these two leap months are in the next 4 years. There's your Adar 2. All right. Remember the prophetic pattern of the seven feasts. The first four are certainly prophetic of tremendous events. I believe those in the fall will be as well. Here's my question today. Will the two witnesses, when they show up in Jerusalem, will the two witnesses show up on or around any of these three fall feasts? My hunch is absolutely. Go ahead, Blake. Here's our next 4 years. This is an exercise. Everybody repeat after me. Exercise. This is a test of the emergency broadcasting prophetic system. I am not saying that what I'm about to explain is going to happen. I'm just saying, watch how these events could potentially, and not only this year, but there are some reasons for the year after and the year after that. But pay close attention and watch this exercise. What if the two witnesses show up this year? Again, I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying if they did, and for grins, what if it was on 21 Tishri? Go ahead, Blake. There it is. And speaking of the seven feasts, why the 21st of Tishri? Because remember, the 15th of Tishri is Tabernacles. The seventh day of Tabernacles, see Leviticus 23, is called Hoshana Rabbah. And it means a great pronouncement. Save now. Hosanna. This is on the 21st of Tishri this year. This will actually happen. They will celebrate Hoshana Rabbah, the last of the days of judgment, where one can still, quote, alter your verdict. The devout, the night before, on the 20th of Tishri, they've been up all the previous nights studying the Torah. If there was a temple, the Jews would have circled it four times. Some scriptures would be read. If this was the first time that the temple has been in functioning, and if it happens to be the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles, what kind of passionate parade would be circling that temple waited for since 70 AD? And the very first time they do, they're going to shout. And here's what they will shout. They're going to shout, "The voice, the herald Elijah." That's going to happen this Tishri 21. I don't know if there'll be a temple in place, but there will be this Hoshana Rabbah. If there's not a tabernacle, then around the various synagogues around the world, they're going to march around their synagogue four times with four different species of wood bows. They are indeed going to shout, "The herald Elijah." What if, just for grins, what if there was a tabernacle this fall? This is an exercise. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying, just try this on. Remember the 1260? What if they showed up this year on the 21st of Tishri? Go ahead, add 1260 days. You come up with 14 Adar 2 in the year 2024. Let's go 8 years from now. Go ahead, Blake. Let's go to the year that will end in the year 2027 and 28. There they are on the bottom. Remember the seven feasts. What if Jesus does return, Revelation 19, on Yom Kippur? Roughly 7-8 years from now. Well, then that would be 14 Tishri, the year 2027. What would he do? Well, he's probably going to cleanse and rededicate the temple. We know from Revelation, how long are the 144,000 supposed to prophesy? 1,260 days. From when?